It is February the 12th. We are in Parshas Metsora on page 624. The last type of tzaras that we are going to discuss, the last one that Torah discusses, is tzaras that appears on a house. By the Merah Hashem, Moshe Bel Aaron, Lemar Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Ki savo el eretz Canaan, when you shall come to the land of Canaan, asher ani nosein lachem la'achuza, that I am giving to you as an inheritance.
Lamed
Dalet. Thank you.
I'm sorry, yes. Yes. We started with Lamed Gimel 33, at the bottom of the page. Yes. When you'll come to the land of Canaan, that I will give to you as an inheritance, V'nasati negat saras, and I will place an affliction of tzaras, beveis eretz achuzaschem, on the houses or of the land of your inheritance. Our sages stop on the word vinasati, I shall place, rather than say, if it should appear, then this is what you should do. Instead it says, I shall place an affliction of tzaras. And from here we derive that Hashem is telling them that I'm going to place tzaras on your houses. And the reason I'm going to place tzaras on your houses is because when there is tzaras, as we will learn, if it is a persistent tzaras, then the bricks of the tzaras need to be removed from the house. So imagine the wall of a house that has tzaras on it, and imagine needing to break the wall and take those bricks out of the wall. They didn't have drywall in those days. So imagine a brick home or a stone home, and then tzaras appearing on those stones, and those stones needing to be cut out of the wall and replaced. Well, if it's a thick wall with several layers of stone, then it is likely that there will be some hollow spaces inside the wall as you remove stone from the wall. And the people of Canaan, those who live there, knowing that the Jewish people were on their way to Canaan, the Jews, when we left Mitzrayim, we left Egypt, we were destined to enter the land of Canaan almost immediately. That was the original plan, that we would come to Har Sinai and get the Torah, and from there go on to Eretz Yisrael. We got delayed, and we ended up wandering for 40 years. During those 40 years, the people of Canaan, in order to prevent us from acquiring their wealth, hid their wealth in the walls of their homes and put in the stones and plastered it over. And in that way, they hoped that we would not get a hold of their wealth, even if we would get a hold of their homes. So Hashem says, I will place tzaras on your home, because that way you'll have to remove the stones. And when you remove the stones, then you'll discover the wealth. So it will be a means of acquiring wealth. That is what Chazal say on this word, Vinasati, I shall place tzaras on your walls. Now, this is a difficult Chazal. It's a difficult statement from our sages because, as we will see, one of the reasons why a person may get tzaras on their home, we know already that one reason is because of Lashon Hara. We've learned already that Hashem says that there's a progression. A person may do something for which they deserve to get tzaras, but Hashem will first afflict their home. And if the person does not do teshuva, then he may afflict their clothing. And if a person still does not do teshuva, then he may afflict their bodies as well. It could be a progression. So that can be a reason for getting tzaras on one's home. But there are specific reasons for getting tzaras on one's home rather than on one's clothing or one's body. And one of those reasons is tzaras ayin, is stinginess. A person who is stingy, who is not willing to give tzedakah, a person who is stingy, who is not willing to lend their items, they are at risk for getting tzaras on their home. Because as we will see, in the process of dealing with tzaras on one's home, one is going to have to take their items out of the house. And a person who is stingy with their home is going to have to lose the use of their home, as we'll see. So if, in fact, one of the reasons for being afflicted with tzaras on one's home is because of stinginess, it seems to be counterintuitive that a stingy person will end up making money on the tzaras that they will get on their home. So that's a difficulty which we need to resolve, that why would Hashem specifically give wealth to a person who was stingy? So that's something which we're going to tackle, not right this moment, but that's a point which we're going to have to deal with as we move through this discussion of Tzaras on a home. But at any rate, Chazal do say that it was, at least at times, a source of wealth for the person who got Tzaras in their home. Instead of it being a terrible thing, it ended up being an overall gain with the wealth that they got that was in the wall of the home.
Was that their money?
It was the money of those who of the original Kananim who had either left or were killed, and they, Lamed 35. Uva shalo habayis, and the one who owns the house shall come. V'higid la kohen leimor, he'll tell the kohen, saying, Kinega nirali babayis, I have seen something in the house that appears to be an affliction. The Gemara says that even if someone is a Talmud Chacham, is a Torah scholar, and they know that what they're looking at is Tzaras, nevertheless, they should not say, I saw an affliction of Tzaras in my home. They should say it with humility. They should say, something that appears to be Tzaras is in my home. That's the way they should say it. And the reason they should say it that way is because the as with the Tzaras on a person or on clothing, the only one who can pronounce something to be Tzaras is the Kohen. That is it. And he's the only one who can rule it that it is there or that it is not there. Therefore, anybody else should not say that it is Tzaras. In addition to that, as we will see in the next pasuk, the Kohen is going to prevent a very large loss of money for the person who has Tzaras on their home. As it says in Pasuk Lamed Vav 36, Vitziva Kohen, the Kohen shall come and ufinu es habayis, they shall empty the house. B'terem yavo Kohen liros es hanega, before the Kohen comes to see the affliction, because if the affliction shall be Tzaras, the danger is that everything in the home will become tame. V'lo yitma kol asher babayis, in this way, everything in the house shall not become tame. The achar can only afterwards, yavo ha-kohen liros es habayis, the kohen will come to see the home. So before he even gets there and takes his first look at the tzaras, or at the potential tzaras, the alleged tzaras, he will first command that everything in the home be removed. Because tzaras in a home makes the entire home and everything in it tameh. And so, to prevent that problem, the Kohen says to remove everything from the house. Now this is a fascinating thing, because I would have thought that if the Kohen comes and says that yes, in fact, this blemish on the wall is Tzaras, it should follow that retroactively, everything in the home that's been there since the blemish appeared should be Tameh. Because the Kohen is not saying that now it appears to be Tzaras, he's saying this color and this size and this configuration of discoloration on your wall has always been Tzaras. That's what he's saying. He's saying that which you reported to me is in fact Tzaras. So if that's the case, then it's always been Tzaras. It's not brand new Tzaras. For example, if a person is feeling feverish and they go to the doctor and the doctor says, sorry, you have the flu. The person is not contagious from now on. They were contagious before, but they didn't know it because they didn't know they had the flu. But they were contagious before. And unfortunately, those who came in contact with that person the past day or two are at risk for getting the flu. Even though the doctor had not yet pronounced it as the flu, but the doctor's diagnosis does not make it the flu from here on in. It's the flu retroactively. Here as well, what I would have thought is the Kohen's diagnosis should mean that it was Tzaras all along. And therefore, everything that was in the house from the moment that the homeowner noticed it should become Tameh. But that's not what happens. From the moment that the Kohen says this is Tzaras, it is only from that point forward that the legal definition of Tzaras applies. Not definition, legal status of Tzaras applies. And anything that happened before, it is not considered to be Tzaras. So therefore, things that were in the house prior to the Kohen's pronouncement are not Tameh. Only those things that are in the house following the Kohen's pronouncement become Tameh. Which means, in theory, if the Kohen would not come to the home, then nothing would ever become tamei. If the kohen were prevented from coming to the home, if the homeowner chose to keep it quiet and not come and tell the kohen that they have taras in their home, then their home will remain tahar. It will not become tamei. The homeowner will be doing an avera, because the halacha is a person who has a blemish like this needs to come to the kohen and find out what the issue is. Plus, if in fact the tzaras is there to help this person do teshuva for that which they've done wrong, by not reporting it to the kohen, they are not going to achieve the teshuva that they need to achieve. So they're only hurting themselves by not reporting it. However, in terms of a legal status, the tzaras does not get a legal status of tzaras until the kohen pronounces it such. You have a question?
He could move everything that's in the house prior to the kohen.
That is what the kohen tells him to do. Take everything out of the house. Anything that moves, get it out of the house, so that if, in fact, I pronounce it as tzaras, it will not affect those items. That's what he tells him to do. Yeah.
I'm lost. The tzaras indicates that there's something in the walls.
The tzaras is what you see on the wall.
Where are these treasures that they got hid in the wall?
Well, we'll see presently that if there's tzaras on the stones, the stones that have the tzaras have to be removed from the house. So when you pull out the stones, behind the stones, you'll find treasure.
That originally belonged to the Canaanites.
Potentially, yes.
So this really isn't a bad thing.
That's what we'll talk about. We're going to talk about that. It seems that it shouldn't be a bad thing, but that seems to be counterintuitive, because if the whole point is for teshuva, now the whole point is someone was stingy, why would they end up with getting this treasure? So we're going to discuss this.
Good.
Okay. Yes.
I think it's beautiful the way the Torah is written here in the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He loves his people so much. He doesn't want to cause too much financial loss, that we're allowed to be told to remove the items.
Yes, yes. That's to avoid everything becoming tamei. Now, the Gemara says that most things that become tamei are not a problem if they're tamei, because most items that become tamei can be taken to the mikvah, and then they're tahar. So if your silver kiddush cup, or your leichter for your Shabbos candles becomes tamei, you bring them to the mikvah, dip them in the water, and they're tahar. So that's not such a big deal. It may be troublesome, maybe a lot of work, but it's not a permanent damage. The food that becomes tamei cannot be put in the mikvah, but the food that becomes tamei can be eaten when you're tamei. That's, people become tamei. There's no reason why you can't eat tamei food. So when the Torah says that the kohen should tell the person to remove the items from the house, which items is the Torah concerned with? So the Torah's real concern are those items that cannot be consumed and also cannot become tahar in a mikvah. And that would be earthenware utensils, ceramic utensils. If a person's china becomes tamei, there's nothing that can be done about it. It remains tamei forever. So it is particularly the earthenware, ceramic utensils that need to be removed from the house to prevent them from becoming tamei. Of course, if a person wants to make sure that they don't have to take anything to the mikvah, they could take all their metal and glass and everything else out of the house as well. But the main issue over here is the ceramic utensils. That's the main thing. Now, when a person had to take everything out of the house, where did they put them? So we know a person could rent self-storage, but but it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a moving truck and you don't have the time to do it because the coin's on his way over, you just got to take it out and put it on your front lawn. That's where it is. So this is one of the ways that a person was punished for being stingy. For example, if someone, Reuven approached Shimon and asked him if he could borrow an item. Said, I need to borrow something. I need to borrow a lawnmower. And Shimon says, sorry, I don't have a lawnmower. But really, Shimon does have a lawnmower. He just doesn't want to lend it out because he's stingy. Then, the next day, Shimon finds tzaras on his house, and he has to take everything out of his house, including his lawnmower. And Reuven walks by and sees Shimon's lawnmower on the front lawn. And Shimon is embarrassed, because it's now obvious that he really did have one, and he was not being 100% truthful with Reuven. In addition, when anybody would walk by the home and see all the items outside on the front lawn, they would know this person must have gotten saras in his home. And that is also an embarrassing thing. So it became a public spectacle when a person got saras in their home. When a person has saras on their body, it also becomes a public spectacle because it means they're thrown out of the community. So a person can hide that perhaps for a few days, but after a little while, it becomes obvious that so-and-so is not here, and people start to talk, and it gets around. Hopefully people don't talk, because then they might also get saras. But it does become known that something happened with so-and-so. Saras on clothing is less public, because it's only that article of clothing, and that can be kept relatively quiet. But saras on a home is impossible to keep quiet. Even if you found the moving truck to take your stuff to self-storage, you're not moving anywhere. All of a sudden the movers show up and they start taking everything out of the house and then they drive off. Where are you guys going? Nowhere. Why the moving truck? We just decided to put our stuff in self-storage for a little while. I don't know. We're getting the house painted. Whatever. Right?
Well, they will be.
Right.
Yeah. So they have to move out for the 7 days also?
We haven't gotten to 7 days yet.
Okay.
Right. You're asking a good question. They would become tummy if they're in the house. Yeah.
So if the person wasn't stingy, how would they know they had things in their walls? You know, valuables.
Okay, good. You're asking, what if a person didn't do any averos?
Right.
So now they have stuff in their walls. So then how is Hashem going to give it to them? If the only way to do it is through tzaras.
Right.
Right. That is the flip side of the same question. We have to deal with this issue. The main question is, why is Hashem rewarding someone who did something wrong and not rewarding someone who did something right?
Well, they're not being rewarded. They're really being embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to share, I know somebody who's been through experience with mold in her house.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that.
Yeah, and she was saying that it's so embarrassing because she had to remove everything and it was lying on the front lawn. Yeah. And of course, right away I thought of...
Yeah, mold is the closest thing we have today to this sort of thing. Although mold is not saras.
No, but she said it was embarrassing because everything
would
be removed.
Yeah. No, it cost her a fortune.
Yeah, it cost her a fortune. Right. Okay, so now we get to the real crux of the matter. Is it saras or is it not saras? Pasuk Lamed Zayin, verse 37. V'ra'as ha'nega, the coin will see the affliction. V'ne'a nega b'kiros ha'bayis, behold, the affliction is in the walls of the house. Shekaruros yirak rakos, o adam damos. Shekaruros means deep or recessed. Yirak rakos, it means a yellowish greenish color or a reddish color, adam damos. How do they translate?
Deep green
or a deep red. But the green is greenish yellowish, and a deep or a deep red. Umarehen shafal minakir, and the appearance is deeper than the wall itself, which means it says lower. It means that the color of the wall, of the natural color of the wall, looks like it is what's the right word for this? I don't have the artist's
faded or background.
Yeah, it looks like the natural color of the wall looks like it is above the color of the tzaras. Meaning the color of the tzaras looks like it is a lower color.
Recessed,
right. Where in fact the tzaras really is, it's not painted, but in theory if it were to be painted, it would actually be above the color of the wall, but it doesn't look like that. It looks like the tzaras actually is further recessed and the paint, the coloring is
depressed.
Okay. I mean, right. I don't think that explains it any better than I did.
No,
right. So, okay.
Could I just ask you? That's a confusing concept.
It was true with the skin as well. That the appearance of the affliction looks like it is
below the surface of the skin
rather than the other way around, where it's sitting on top of the skin.
I understand that because we see that in our own skin all the time. We see like blue veins, okay, that's under the skin and we see it. But something like stone,
I don't know.
This is a strange concept.
I got you. Yeah. I understand. I don't know how that works. Rashi over there says, with this, the tzaras on the skin, he says, just like when you look at a shadow and you look at the sunlight next to shadow, so it looks like that the sunlight is is deeper than the shadow. It looks like the shadow is sitting on top of the sunlight. Now, in reality, that's not the case. In reality, the shade is where the sun is being blocked, and the place where the sun is shining is where there's something shining on the dark area. So really, the sun is theoretically above the shade. But it doesn't look like that. It looks like the shade is sitting on top of the sunlight. So here as well, it looks like the stone is sitting above the tzaras. That's the appearance of how the color works. But I'm not an expert in this. I don't know how that goes. Pasuk Lamed Ches, verse 38. Now he determines that it is tzaras. The kohen will go outside the house to the doorway of the house, and he shall close up the house for 7 days. So the people do move out. It is closed up for 7 days. Just as we find with tzaras of a person or of clothing, there's a 7-day period in which the kohen is going to then come back and see what it looks like after 7 days. Now, the kohen does not proclaim it tzaras when he is standing in the house. He steps outside the house and proclaims it as tzaras. But he also does not go home to his house. He stands right outside the house and proclaims the tzaras as being tzaras. That's where the kohen should be standing, right outside the house, and he proclaims it as tzaras and closes up the house for 7 days. The Gemara tells us that when the Kohen is looking at the tzaras in the house, he is not allowed to open up, if there's not enough light to see the tzaras properly, he cannot bring a light into the house, nor can he open up an area that isn't already open so that sunlight will come in to see the tzaras. He can only look at the tzaras exactly as it is in the lighting that the house naturally has. Now this works in favor of the homeowner, because if it's not good lighting, the kohen cannot be sure that it looks like tzaras. And then he steps, but if, assuming he does see it properly, he steps outside the house and he proclaims it as tzaras. The Gemara uses this as one of the sources in the Torah for the concept of chazaka. Chazaka is a legal concept which we use it in Torah. It is also used in virtually every legal system in the world, and in fact, we use it in our daily lives all the time. Chazaka means a presumption. A presumption meaning that the way that you have seen something recently, you presume it is still that way. Until you have reason to believe that it changed, you don't presume a change. You assume that it stays as it is. So here, the way you see that is that the Kohen saw the tzaras, then he steps outside the house. Now he can no longer see the tzaras when he steps outside the house. Yet, he is saying it is tzaras. Maybe it changed from the moment the Kohen stepped out of the house, from when he saw it till he stepped out, maybe it changed. After all, there was no natural reason for it to come. It was a spiritual thing. It showed up. So now he steps out of the house. So maybe it changed from its color or whatever it is. But since he saw it that way a few seconds ago, we have a chazaka. We presume that that is the case now as well. We, of course, operate like this all the time. We don't presume that things have changed dramatically unless we know they've changed dramatically, right? We don't presume that wherever we parked our car, we assume it is still there. We only hope that's the case. We don't presume any differently. And same is true with our homes and with our items. We assume everything stays as is unless we know that it changed.
And when they check for the Eruv.
That is a good example, right? The chazaka of an Eruv, that's a halachic legal standard that we say that if the Eruv was checked, let's say on Wednesday, we don't presume that it came down between Wednesday and Shabbos, even though it might have. And no one's checking it on that. And even if you would check it Friday right before Shabbos, well, Shabbos morning, you want to carry, who says the Eruv is still up? Maybe it came down. We work with Chazaka. We presume it's still up. With the mikvah as well, the mikvah was checked and that it is a kosher mikvah. We presume it is still a kosher mikvah unless something happens that would give us reason to doubt the kashrus of the mikvah or of the Eruv or of the food that we're eating. We presume that it remains the same as it was when it was checked. So here, one of the sources for that in the Torah is this verse right here, that he steps outside and pronounces it as saras. So he closes up the house for 7 days. Pasuk Lamed Tes, verse 39. Yes, yes.
So the fact that he's stepping outside, so if anything should happen, he's not going to see it. Why can't he just say it while he's looking at it?
So because if he would pronounce it as Saras when he's in the house, he'll become Tame.
We give up.
So he steps out of the house.
Out.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Pasuk Lamed Tes, verse 39. Kohen Bayom HaShvi. The Kohen will return on the seventh day. V'ra'a, and he will see. V'inei Pasa HaNega B'kiros HaBayis. The affliction has spread on the walls of the house. And you know already from the tzaras on a person and the tzaras on clothing, spreading is a bad sign. That's always a problem. And here, that triggers the first step of getting rid of tzaras. V'tzivoa kohen, the kohen shall command, v'chiltzu es ho'avonim asher bohen anoga, they shall remove the stones that have the affliction, v'yishlichu es hen el michutz la'ir, they will be thrown outside of the city, el makom tamei, to a tamei place. Stones that have tzaras on them remain tamei, even after they're removed from the house. These stones remain tamei. Therefore, you don't want to put them outside the city in a place where people frequent that area, because then people will become tamei. You don't want to put them in the local park, because when people go to the park, they'll become tamei. You got to put them outside the house in a place that nobody goes, because they are tamei. You put them in a tamei place. It's our nuclear waste dump.
And the they is the owner?
Well, I'll tell you who they is in a minute. I'm sorry?
Could you bury them? Is it,
I don't know if burial helps. It's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. That's a good question. You're pointing out, really, when we bury a dead body, it prevents the tumei, right? Yeah. Although if somebody walks on top of a grave, they do become tumei. And over here, I do not know the halacha. It's a good question.
Now these people become tumei?
Whoever's handling it becomes tumei, yes.
Would you therefore put it in a cemetery?
So they did not typically put it in a cemetery, because people go into a cemetery and it's a different type of tumah. It's not the same tumah as that of a cemetery. The Gemara says from here, Oy l'rasha, oy l'shcheino. Woe to the evil person, woe to his neighbor. The Mishnah, when it says that, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, when it says that, is projecting to us the concept of choose your friends and acquaintances wisely. Because if the person is evil and you have an acquaintance with that person, it's inevitable it's going to rub off on you as well, and that's not a good thing. So,
what about the reverse? What about if you're being good?
So the Gemara says, Tov letzadik, Tov l'shcheino. Good for the righteous person, good for their neighbor. But for an evil person, you want to stay away from an evil person because of the influence that the evil person will have on you. So the Gemara uses that over here as well, because in the event that a person has a semi-detached home or a townhouse, and the wall upon which the stones that have taras is, that wall, if that's the wall they share, then the person removes the stones because they have tzaras. He's got a hole in his wall. Well, the guy on the other side of the wall now also has a hole in his wall. So, oy l'rasha, oy l'shcheino. Woe to the evil person, woe to his neighbor.
So does then his stuff, because there's a hole in the wall, become tame?
I don't know what happens. That's a good question. I don't know what happens when they cut out the stone. Now there's a hole. I don't know if it goes through the hole. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. But that's what it means. Yeah. That's what it means, that they shall remove the stone. That's why it says they. In the event that he's got a neighbor sharing the wall, then together they will remove that stone.
Do they share also the good
mind? Good. Okay. Well, we're going to get to the treasure. Good point. Okay, I imagine they would share the treasure, yes. Okay, Pasuk Mem Aleph, verse 41. Veshabayis yaktzia mibayis saviv, and the house he shall peel, is probably the best, scrape, okay, all around the hole, which means the plaster that is around the hole where the stone was also needs to be scraped away. Whatever plaster was holding that stone in place now needs to be scraped away. Plaster is made from dirt, which hardens. V'shafchu es ha'afar asher hiktzu. They shall spill the dirt that they have scraped away. El michutz la'ir, outside this city. El makom tamei, again to a tamei place, because the plaster is also tamei. V'lakechu avanim acheros. They shall take other stones. V'heviu al tachas avanim, and place it in place of the stones. V'afar acher yikach, and another set of dirt he shall take. V'tach es habayis, and he shall plaster the house. So they, meaning he and his neighbor, the one who shares the wall, they shall remove both the stones and the plaster. They shall take them outside the city. They shall take new stones and place the new stones in the house. But the plaster job should be done only by the one who had the tzaras. That's why it switches to the singular, v'tach v'afar acher yikach, and he, the singular, the one who had the tzaras, should take new dirt and plaster the house. Pasuk Mem Gimel, verse 43. V'im yashuv anega ufarach babayis. Now we get the real problem. If the affliction shall come back and blossom in the house, achar chileitz es ha'avonim, after the stones have been removed, v'acharei hiktzos es habayis, and after the house has been scraped away, meaning scraping of the plaster, v'acharei hitoach, and after it has been re-plastered, if after all of that, then the tzara shall come back, uvoa kohen, the kohen will come, vira'ah, and he will see, v'inei pasa anega babayis, he will see that the tzaras has spread in the house. Tzaras mam eres hi, this is, they call it a malignant tzaras, babayis in the house, tamei hu, the house is now completely tamei, it is unsalvageable. V'nasatz es habayis, he shall destroy the entire home, demolish the house. Es avonav, its stones, ves eitzav, and its wood, ves kalafar abayis, and all of the dirt of the house. Ve'otzio michutz la'ir, you shall take it to outside the city, el makom tamei, to a tamei place. So that is the worst case scenario, and that is that the home has, the tzaras returns to the home after it's been removed from the home, and that then the entire home has to be demolished. Now, now, just to make it clear over here, that verse, Pasuk Mem Dal, verse 44, says the Kohen will come and see that the tzaras has spread in the house. That is a difficult pasuk because it doesn't need to spread. As long as it comes back, even if it's the same size as it was before, it doesn't matter. Every time tzaras comes back, you know that you're in big trouble. Coming tzaras returning after it's been removed is the worst of all worlds. So it does not need to spread. And therefore, this word that it has spread in the house triggers a whole discussion in the Gemara. And the conclusion is complex and difficult to fit into the wording of the Torah. However, I am going to tell you the conclusion of the discussion in the Gemara. And that conclusion is that in the event that the Kohen, we said that the Kohen sees that the Tzaras, that it is Tzaras, he closes the house for 7 days, comes back after 7 days and discovers that it has spread. So then the stones are removed and new stones are put in. Then, it doesn't say 7 days, but 7 days later, he comes back and the tzaras has come back, the house is demolished. That's the rule. What happens if after that first week, the kohen comes back and the tzaras has not spread? It is exactly the way it was before. So the Torah here doesn't discuss that. And the answer to that is similar to what we saw with saras on a person's body. The house is given a second week. So after 1 week, if it has spread, then those stones have to be removed. If after 1 week it has remained as is, then it is given a second week. If the coin returns at the end of the second week, then if it's spread, for sure, you have to remove the stones. If it has disappeared, well then fine. The question is, what happens if it remains the same after 2 weeks? Now, we had different types of tsaras. We had regular tsaras, where remaining the same after 2 weeks triggered the second stage of tsaras. That was bad. We had other forms of tsaras, like with a wound, where remaining the same did not trigger the second stage tsaras. It had actually spread in order to trigger the second stage tsaras. Here, remaining the same triggers the next stage. It has to actually disappear or get better in order for the stones not to be removed. But if after 2 weeks it remains exactly the same, then the stones need to be removed and new stones have to be put in. Then, after the stones are put in, a week later, if the tsaras returns, then the house is demolished. So, with a home, the stones are never removed unless there is a spreading of the tsaras. In the first week, the stones are only removed if there is a spreading of the tsaras. After the second week, even if the tsaras remains the same, the stones are removed. The home is never demolished unless the tsaras comes back after the stones have been removed. Here we have, for the first time, we've seen a 3-week process of tsaras. Until now, the longest we've had is a 2-week process. Here we have a 3-week process. 1 week to see what happens. If it remains the same, wait a second week. At the end of the second week, if it remains the same or spreads, the stones are removed, new stones are put in. Wait a third week. If the tsaras returns, the house is demolished. The Mishnah says in Maseches Negayim, in the Masech that deals with tsaras, that there's no tsaras that has less than a 1 week process. I mean, the Kohen comes and says, this is tsaras. You got to wait at least a week. It's never less than a week, and it's never more than 3 weeks. Now, of course, a person who has tsaras, they could have tsaras for years once they get to the second stage tsaras. But in terms of the Kohen coming back and forth and checking and checking and checking, what do you do? The minimum amount is going to be 1 week. Of all the different tsarases that we learned about, the minimum is 1 week. The maximum is 3 weeks of the coin, of the process of determining whether it is second stage tsaras or not. Yeah.
And is this because the person or the whole family hasn't done verbally proper teshuva?
I suppose that that's probable, but I don't know for sure. I suppose that they have not corrected the problem.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Who knows? Maybe they have to. Right? Maybe they have to do more. Maybe they deserve the punishment. I don't know. Yeah.
At what period of history are you talking about? I mean, obviously we don't have that today. So.
Right. So this was in force during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Really, before then, from the time we came to Eretz Yisrael until the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, this process was in place.
The first
Beis Hamikdash. In the second Beis Hamikdash, I imagine it was in place, but I don't know for certain.
And where did they live? And who would want them in their house?
Yeah, good, good. Their mother.
Because only a mother could love them.
If the house is destroyed, you know, demolished, and there's supposed to be goods in it, does the goods become tummy? Are they allowed to take the tummy out?
Well, they took the goods out before.
Oh, okay.
The goods were never put back in because it's been this process of waiting to see what happens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But what about the stuff in the wall?
I mean the treasures.
Oh, the treasures. The treasures, they might be tummy, but you can use treasures that are tummy.
Oh.
Okay. a couple more psukim, and then we will talk about, try to answer that question. Pasuk Mem Zayin, verse 47. I'm going to... In fact, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tackle this issue because we're going to run out of time. So I want to tackle the issue now, and then we're actually up to 46, not 47, and we'll get to that, Mirza Hashem, probably next week. That's probably where we're going to get up to tonight, is verse 46, most likely. Okay, so now, what happens with this person? This person spoke Lashon Hara or was stingy, and they got saras on their home, and now they break down their home and they discover treasure. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that there are certain mitzvos in the Torah that there is a debate whether they ever happened or not. There are certain mitzvos in the Torah, for example, the mitzvah of Ben Sorer Umorah, that's the wayward son. The wayward son is put to death even though they have not done anything for which one normally gets capital punishment. The wayward son is only stolen and eaten in a gluttonous manner. Nevertheless, we put the wayward son to death because the Torah says if that's the way he's behaving now when he's 13 years old, he will certainly become a murderer later in life, and therefore to prevent him from becoming a murderer, we put him to death now. That is a mitzvah in the Torah in Parashas Ki Seitse. Please God, we'll get to it in a few years. So that is a mitzvah in the Torah. There is another mitzvah in the Torah called Ir Hanidachas. That's where an entire city, or at least the majority of a city, has worshipped idolatry. As a group, this city has worshipped idolatry. Then the entire city is killed out. Not the individuals, not the normal way that one kills someone who worshipped Avodah Zarah, but rather they are killed by the sword. The city is those who, not the righteous people, but the wicked people are killed by the sword, and everything in the city must be burned, destroyed. Everything, even that which is owned by righteous people, gets destroyed. That is another mitzvah in the Torah. There is a debate in the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin whether either of those things ever happened. One opinion in the Gemara is neither of those things ever happened, and they will never happen. That even though the Torah gave us a mitzvah of Ben Sorer Umorah, the wayward son, even though the Torah gave us a mitzvah of the Ir Hanidachas, the city that has gone off and worshipped Avodah Zarah, it never happened and it never will happen. The Gemara says, so then why does the Torah write it? And the Gemara says, drosh v'kabol schar, expound upon it and receive reward, which is a very cryptic answer. What does that mean? Please God, when we get to those mitzvos, we'll discuss that. That is not for tonight. But a third mitzvah that the Torah, that the Gemara has a debate about whether it happened or not, is this, saras on a house. One opinion in the Gemara is, lo haya v'lo asid lios, it never happened and it never will happen. That is one opinion in the Gemara. Not saras in general. Saras for sure has happened. But saras on a home, the Gemara says, according to one opinion, never happened, never will happen. And there's another opinion that says, yes, it did happen. So there's two different opinions over there. But if there are two opinions about whether it happened or whether it didn't happen, and whether it can happen, then for sure our original question is even stronger. Because as we said, our sages tell us, not only did it happen, but then Hashem told the Jewish people in advance, it is going to happen. Hashem says, V'nasati, I will place tzaras on your homes, and you'll thank me for it, because there's treasure under those stones. So it's a good thing. So that those two statements seem to be directly contradictory. How can it be that one statement is, there will be tzaras, and the other statement is, it never happened, and it never will happen? Now, in theory, one could argue that those two opinions are not agreeing with each other. There are two different opinions in the Gemara. We have many debates in the Gemara. And perhaps one opinion is that Hashem predicted that to the Jewish people that it will happen. And the other opinion is, no, it never happened and it will never happen. However, I believe that we can make the two opinions actually agree with each other. And that is because of the following. Imagine a person, the wall of the house develops this reddish color, this yellowish greenish color. The house is neither yellow nor green nor red, and it's got this ugly mark on the home. And the person says, oh no, oh my, maybe I've been stingy, maybe I've spoken Lashon Hara. The person's like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And he now has to call the Kohen. Goes to the Kohen. And he says, Kohen, I think I see something that looks like Tzaras. Kohen says, okay, get everything out of your house. Oh my, go home. Everything out of the house, everything comes out of the house. It is terribly embarrassing. It is just a horrible, horrible situation. It starts to rain and all my stuff is outside. Oh, it's just terrible. Cohen comes to the house, looks at the wall, and he says, close, but it's not Saras. Oh. Or he says, not enough light in this house. I can't tell whether it is or isn't Saras, so it's not Saras, because I can't pronounce it as Saras. Dodge that bullet. Okay, now what? Now, I've got to get everything back into the house, and wonderful. Now my wife comes home, and she says, get that thing out of my house. We are not having Sheva Brachos in this house with that stuff on the wall. We're just not doing it. Okay. So I try to scrub, but it doesn't come off because it's not paint. So what exactly am I going to do with that?
Take it out.
I'm going to take out the stones. So I'm going to chisel away the stones, not because it actually has a din of tzaras, but because I got this blemish on my wall. It's not mold. It's not paint. It's not my kid's drawing on the wall. It's something. So I'm going to cut out those stones. And when I cut out those stones, there's going to be a glow. And I'm going to look inside the wall and I'm going to see an unbelievable treasure inside the wall.
Pays for the Sheva Bracha.
It's pays for the Sheva Bracha. Very good. Pays for the wedding. Right. So the point I'm trying to make to you is that it doesn't have to actually be Tzaras for a person to remove the stones. It's true that in the process of Tzaras, if it actually is Tzaras, one will need to remove the stones. That is true. But there can conceivably be a case where a person is going to remove the stones not because it actually is Tzaras, but because it was a close call and they're going to remove the stones. If you think about it, a person may be stingy or may have spoken Lashon Hara, but not badly enough that they deserve to have actual Tzaras. So Hashem puts them through a pretty close call. The pretty close call is not fun either. Take everything out of my house. Right, the Kohen comes. I got to take everything back into my house. I got to clean up that wall. It's not fun. It's disruptive to my whole lifestyle. It's disruptive to everything that's going on. Even if it's not Tzaras. This is true for Tzaras on a body also. Tzaras on a person's body that turns out to not actually be the halacha of Tzaras is still a skin ailment. It's not fun. It's still a problem. And when a person gets that, even though they may have dodged the actual Tzaras, but it was close enough, a person has to ask themselves, why did I get a close call? The close call can also be a lesson. It can also be a message. It can also be Hashem is saying, whoa, careful, careful. I haven't done it to you yet, but just be careful. Right? Right? It's you don't deserve the patch yet, but watch out. You're treading on thin ice, as my mother used to tell me. So that can be as well. And certainly in the house, that can be the case. So in those cases, even if the Gemara, if the opinion that says Tzaras on the house never happened and never will happen, even if that's true, but that doesn't mean close calls never happened. It just means the actual halacha of Tzaras never happened and never will happen. But the potential, the close call may have happened. It may have happened numerous times. And in that case, Hashem may be rewarding the person for going through the trouble. See, because it's like this. If I don't deserve to get Tzaras on my house, but Hashem is just trying to give me a warning. You know, the cop pulls you over, says, I won't give you a ticket this time, just a warning. Whew, right? Well, good, but here, I did have to go through significant embarrassment taking everything out of the house, and I had to go through expense. Because I'm sure I probably got to help pay someone to help me get everything out of the house, bring everything back into the house. I got to cut out the stones. I got to bring a contractor in here to fix my house. So there is expense involved. So in that situation, Hashem can show me love at the same time by giving me compensation for my trouble with the treasure. Because Hashem can be saying, don't think I don't love you. I'm not out to get you. I'm out to help you. I don't want you to get tzaras on your house. I don't want you to have to actually demolish your home. I'm just trying to scare you. That's all. And to prove to you, to show you that I only love you and I'm only here for your best interest, I'll give you something in return for your trouble. Here's some treasure. But be careful, because next time it may actually be the real thing. So Hashem, in one fell swoop over there, can at the same time give a person a pretty frightening warning and also show him that he loves him and he's here to help him. He's not here to hurt him. Those two things can happen simultaneously with a close call of tzaras. So I think that that is how we can answer this question of how are you giving a treasure to someone who did a sin? The answer is, they didn't quite do the sin. They're on the verge, and Hashem is kind of straddling the fence over here. Another point can be made, which really was brought up before, which is that if I'm sharing my wall with the person next door to me, and they are the ones who get the tzaras, but I am going to share with that treasure, right? Because it's between our homes. So even if I didn't get tzaras on my home, but I'm going to go through some trouble because oy la rasha, oy la shcheina, woe to the evil person, woe to me. Okay, but I can still get something out of it, perhaps, and get the treasure that's inside the home. That's another way that it could turn out. The person who didn't actually do the sin will also benefit from the treasure. Yes?
Will the judge rule? Is it such a way he has to share the treasure with the
judge? It should be. If it's between the homes, it should go both ways. Although it may depend on whether it's leaning towards one side or the other. That would be a discussion in Chosha Mishpat, in a monetary discussion. Yeah.
If they were asked to remove the stones from the house, with the possibility that it could be tzaras, and they can't live in the house, and how can they go back in and replace the stones? Is it after the week?
Once the stones are removed, they can go back into the house.
Once the stones are removed.
Yeah, but you're still wary that it may come back, so be careful. Right. Okay, so we're going to stop here. The last point we have, which Ms. Hashem will cover next week, is what happens if a person walks into the home and there's tzaras, and also how, if the tzaras goes away, then how is the house purified? Just like we have with the person, with the birds and all that. Mm-hmm. So we've discussed that with the house as well.